Greetings, warriors, veterans, and American-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciates you joining us for the second hour of the show on this fine day in America. We are and should be proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to discuss climate change with Greg Wrightstone from the CO2 Coalition. Then Diane Raver will present the movie of the month. And of course, we'll conclude with military history and our armed citizens report. So it's a pleasure to introduce Greg Wrightstone. He heads the CO2 Coalition. They're very concerned about the damage caused by climate change. Or is it the absence of science that's the big deal? Anyway, welcome, Greg.
Well, thanks. Good to be on. Good to have you help me and assist us spreading the truth that your listeners should sleep well because there is no climate crisis. And we'll go into that in detail as we go on.
Yeah, we will. You know, Greg, start by giving us a little bit of your background. How does a person end up in the CO2 Coalition? You know, when I graduated from college, the most I knew about CO2 was that it was carbon dioxide and I breathed it out. Now, I knew that the climate was changing, but there was no big change in my lifetime, and I'm in my 80s. And then I started hearing about global warming as a disaster, then global cooling as a disaster. So tell us a bit about your background and take us into this issue.
Well, I'm a geologist by training, and it was about 2015 I started really looking into these claims of climate change and disasters related to man-made supposed warming of our atmosphere. And I knew as a geologist that some of the things we're being told were just incorrect. For example, the main thing was ocean acidification. They're saying the oceans are becoming acidified. As a geologist, I knew that throughout Earth's history, carbon dioxide levels were 15 and 20 times higher than what they are today. And the oceans never became acidified. They've been firmly alkaline, and they still are, and will remain alkaline, not acidic. And so that led me into a deep dive. I said, if they're lying to us about this, it's likely they're lying to us about other claims of catastrophe. And I started looking. I took my own research. I went back, looked at the base data. I took a very skeptical view of everybody, and I looked at the base data. And frankly, what I found angered me greatly. I found that much of the so-called science was nothing more than pseudoscience and disinformation. And we found out that many of the things they're claiming to get worse are actually getting better. And so that led me to write my first book, which was Inconvenient Facts. It's been a number one bestseller on Amazon in multiple categories for really the better part of the last 6 years. And this, the book was the result of my own personal search for the truth about climate change. My second book, in that book, we confirmed that there is no climate crisis. My second book, the title is A Very Convenient Warming, How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. And that's the genesis, the crucible of this whole idea. We've gone beyond that there is no climate crisis to not only that, but by almost every metric we look at, Earth's ecosystems are thriving and prospering. And humanity is benefiting from warming and more CO2. It's really completely opposite, is it not, of what we're being told?
Greg, I have to tell you this. I don't think you're politically correct.
Yeah. Well, I will not toe the company line. I will look into it. And I think we've been greatly aided in those of us that are skeptical about the link between human emissions and catastrophic warming. We're greatly added over the last few years since 2020 and the COVID, where people woke up and said, you know what? The experts aren't always right, are they? And it's really led to people doubting people that are called experts. And so that's what we do here at the CO2 Coalition. Let me tell you just a little bit about us. We're some 180 of the top experts. As I'm bad-mouthing experts, I'm saying we're talking about experts. But these are top scientists. I'm a geologist. We have a lot of physicists, and particularly specialists in radiative physics, which involves the greenhouse effect. We have physicists, chemists, energy experts, people of great renown, like John Clauser sits on our board. He's the 2022 Nobel laureate in physics. It's hard to call him a science denier, but they do. All of these people. Another one is Patrick Moore that sits on our board. He's got a PhD in environmental science, and he was a co-founder of Greenpeace. But he left them because they lost their way, and now he's part of our group and promotes the many benefits of carbon dioxide.
Well, you know, what you're saying makes a great deal of sense. Again, I'm not a scientist. I got a bachelor's degree in engineering. That's the closest thing I can come. But I know I'm in my 80s. Nothing has stopped changing, but it all comes back to pretty much the same central thing. I noticed the Statue of Liberty still hasn't been submerged. No. I mean, the things that I can see aren't negatively affected.
Yeah, well, let's talk about sea level rise. When you talk about, there are pictures of the Statue of Liberty right after it was constructed, and there are pictures from last year, and you look at the two and the sea level, the sea's lapping at about the same place it did when the Statue of Liberty was put up. But talk about sea level. You'll find this interesting. It's fascinating. Your listeners will too. The United Nations claims that there will be many islands, dozens of islands and island nations underwater by 2050. The most at-risk island is the Maldives. It's an island nation chain in the Indian Ocean. That's the most at-risk island. And of course, the prime minister of the Maldives is standing there with his hand out because he wants climate reparations. He's due to get billions of dollars in climate reparations. So the highest point on the Maldives is about 14 feet above sea level. So 15,000 years ago, the Maldives were also just above sea level. And in the last 15,000 years, sea level has risen 400 feet. Now you might say, well, Greg, how can that be? Why are the Maldives not under 400 feet of water? Which is a pretty good question to ask. And the answer is a geologic process known as accretion. As sea level rises, the islands, it's called a process known as accretion, that the near shore sediments during storm events get brought up onto the island, washed up on. Other sediments are brought up by critters, crabs, and other things, and they distribute the soil around the island. So the islands actually grow as sea level's rising. Now, think about this. 400 feet of sea level rise, and at the current rate, the Maldives will experience another 2 inches of sea level by 2050. So what they're telling you is the last 400 feet of sea level rise didn't put the islands underwater, but that next 2 inches, look out, that's going to be dangerous. And no, it's not. And we see that all around the world. We see these islands that are actually growing and not shrinking, and they're not being put underwater. And that's just one of the unknown stories that you're being told.
You know, it's amazing how facts mess up a whole bunch of stuff, don't they?
Yeah, and that's why I called it my first book, Inconvenient Facts. And in it, we dispute a lot of this nonsense or the false claim of this greatly increasing extinctions. Wrong, or actually declining extinctions. The false claim of accelerating forest fires in the United States and around the world. False. There are 20% as many fires in both acreage burned and number of fires in the continental United States as there were 80 and 90 years ago. If we can just go down, there's a laundry list. We could go over and spend 2 hours talking about this. But one of the things I like to talk about, though, is the benefits of warming and more CO2. And the greatest example of that is in our agricultural industry and vegetation around the world. We see because of increased CO2, we get an acceleration of the greenhouse effect. It's called CO2-driven photosynthesis that drives plant growth. And we see a greening of the earth from the near polar regions to the equator. And it's best exemplified in our agricultural production. And in my book, I take a look at the top 8 crops in the world in terms of tonnage produced. And the chart shows, it goes back 40 or 50 years, these charts. And we see that these crops are breaking records year after year after year after year. And it's primarily due to more CO2 driving growth. They grow trees, plants, vegetation, and crops grow faster, stronger, healthier. They're able to resist drought with more CO2. We're seeing that. And that's compounded by an increase in warming. We have a modest warming, which means we've lengthened growing seasons.
Wow. You know, there's more to discuss about our planet's health, and Greg is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to do some knee bends. Go halfway down each time, do about 50. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. Greg and I will be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Front Lines of Freedom promo code.
As veterans, we at Concerned Veterans for America know defending freedom comes at a high cost. Our lawmakers should consider that cost when they send troops to war.
If wars don't serve our national interest, our brave men and women shouldn't be deployed into harm's way. Our troops should not be in combat because Congress doesn't want to make tough decisions about military engagement.
Find out how you can join the movement to end our nation's endless wars at cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Front Lines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Greg Wrightstone from the CO2 Coalition. So the increase of CO2 is actually helping us be healthier, produce more food, not killing us? Greg, I think one of the things we're going to have to do at the end of this interview is promote your books again, because we need to know this stuff. And more importantly, we need our kids to know it.
Yeah. Well, we're being deluged by false information or selectively reported information. For example, I just came back from the Netherlands. I spent 8 days there. My new book was published in Dutch. And so we did a book and speaking tour across the Netherlands. And the American media that I had listened to, they were talking about this terrible, unprecedented heat wave in Europe. People were dropping like flies. Well, I was in Europe. In the Netherlands, and I had to wear a winter coat in early June. In June, my wife and I were there. We had to wear winter coats almost every single day. It was cold, and they're reporting that Europe's burning up. And we see that reported time and time again about this Eastern heat wave, but they don't talk about how cold it was at the same time in the Western United States. And the other thing they talk about are with heat waves are, of course, that they're causing death, that people are dropping like flies because of the heat. We've never seen anything like it. But the fact of the matter is, cold temperatures kill significantly more people than heat records. The largest study of its kind was done by Antonio Gasparini and a team of physicians around the world. They looked at 74 million temperature-related deaths. And in this extensive study, they concluded that 20 times as many people die from cold as from heat. What does that tell me? Global warming saves lives because fewer people would die by a significant number from the cold because it'd be not as cold and fewer people would die. And you just don't hear these things. The other thing that people don't talk about, one of my favorite subjects, is the strong relationship between human history and advancement, the human condition, and temperature and climate history. And what we find looking back over back to the first great civilizations that arose during what was called the Bronze Age or the Minoan warm period, that was a lot warmer than it is today. These great civilizations, the Assyrians, the Hittites, the Babylonians, the Harappan Empire in the Indus River Valley, the Chinese, all of these great civilizations rose up in a time that was much, much warmer than it is today. And then, though, it started getting cold. And like all the other historical records, when it started getting cold, it led to horrific consequences of crop failure, famine, pestilence, and mass depopulation. And within 50 or 100 years, all of those empires and civilizations collapsed. It was called the Late Bronze Age Collapse. You can just Google or search, do a web search for Late Bronze Age Collapse. And you don't trust me. I said, don't trust the experts. Go look it up yourself. You'll read all about it. And we see that occurred time and time again, where it warmed up during the Roman warm period, the time of Christ. Life was good. Huge empires arose. It got cold. And again, we had famine, crop failure, pestilence, and mass depopulation. And so historically, much hotter weather has historically been much, much better for humanity and the human condition.
Wow. And it does make sense that the earth knows what it's doing. I mean, it's not just random things falling out of trees. It's, I mean, the earth's been around for several years now, hasn't it? I mean,
Yeah, quite a few. And exactly. And so the benefits, I call this the greatest untold story of the 21st century, that of a thriving ecosystems and thriving of the human condition. And it's, we can relate a lot of it to climate change. And let's just look at that for a minute. Are we in a warming trend? Yes, we are. It's warmed about 1.2 degrees Celsius since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. But the first 250 or so years of that warming occurred at very, very low CO2 levels. And the warming could not have been caused by carbon dioxide. These were naturally driven warming. But what they will tell you is all that changed in the middle of the 20th century when we started adding carbon dioxide. Nothing could be further from the truth. And we can look through periods of time, hundreds of thousands and millions of years to find out that at no time did we see a relationship where increasing CO2 drove temperature increase. We see just as often that we had very, very cold conditions as CO2 levels were very, very high. And again, 6, 8, 10 times what they are today.
Wow. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Greg Wrightstone. Greg, talk now a little bit more about your books and how people can buy them. This is something not just our nation, but certainly our military people need to get this, because this nonsense is affecting how we structure and deploy our military. So I really need everybody to talk about your books again and how people can buy one.
Yeah, my first book was called Inconvenient Facts. All you need are those two words. You can go find it, buy it from my website. A lot of people go to Amazon, Inconvenient Facts. My second book is A Very Convenient Warming. And all you need are those two words, convenient warming. And you can go buy it direct from my website. So Amazon doesn't get the lion's share of the money, or buy it at Amazon. My goal here is to inform the population of the world. And so convenient warming and inconvenient facts are the two. And the other thing I want to talk before we get through here is too, I know there are many military that perhaps their wives or their spouses are homeschooling their children, or they've got charter schools. We're very concerned about the state of science education in America and around the world, that our children are being indoctrinated into this climate cult instead of being taught true science and the scientific method. And so we've launched a new website and an effort. You can go to co2learningcenter.com, CO2 Learning Center. We've got a series of comic books, science-based comic books, that are based on various things like the greenhouse effect, photosynthesis, and other scientific. And we have detailed lesson plans that could be accessed by teachers, homeschool parents, and grandparents. These are effective. We're not making any money at it. And we just want to cover our shipping and our costs for these wonderful comic books that are done manga style. The kids just love them, and they're learning as they read them.
That's awesome. And one more, I don't know if we covered this, we're out of time, but how can listeners who just want to plug into the CO2 Coalition and get involved or see what you're doing, how can they do that?
CO2coalition.org, CO2coalition.org.
Troops, let me encourage you to do that. This is something that we need to know, we need to get out, we need to deal with this stuff. Greg, thank you. Thank you for your very appropriate comments. Thank you for the way CO2 Coalition is serving and protecting our nation and the world. I'm proud that we got to know each other. I hope we can stay friends.
All right. God bless you, Dennis.
Thank you, sir. Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, Diane Raver will present the movie of the month, and we'll open our weekly mailbag. Troops, I hope you're giving serious thought to buying gold and silver to keep your future secure. Check out Universal Coin. That's where I go. Check universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do 100. Oops, no, just do a dozen. With each arm, twice. Then take a break. Stay in the area, because I'll be right back.
Fresh, flash, frozen. From the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com. Hit the Shop Now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
HealthVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HealthVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HealthVet.net. Visit HealthVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And now it's time for the movie of the month. So, of course, we're joined by our great team member, Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. Welcome, Diane. How are you doing?
Thank you, Denny. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be with you. And this is no exception. So thank you for what we do each month.
The movie was really cool. The movie is Cape May County, and Johnny Walker is the definition of a hometown hero. He apparently served in the military, but not in combat, but he apparently has devoted his life to helping veterans, especially those who are homeless or have real needs. He's a Cape May County hero, right?
Yes. I mean, sometimes in this world, I'm very proud to be from New Jersey, and this is an example of something that made me very proud. First of all, I love his name, Johnny Walker, and second of all, it's one thing to want to help, like, you know, I can send a check to Wounded Warriors or this, but he's really, really put himself front and center. And I just thought, in this world where all we hear is nothing but terrible news, isn't it good to know that there are still good people on this earth?
Indeed. And he has devoted his life to it. I'm sure it fulfills him and all that kind of good stuff. But nonetheless, he has decided not to say and support good things, but to go out there and do them every day virtually. Wow. We really need people like him. We need to strongly recognize people that do that.
And of course, over the years, I've had several films about, the horrible suicide rate for our veterans. And to know that somebody's on the front line here, more than just say, hey, we need to do something about it, but really do something about supporting our veterans, just made me very happy to, again, to be a little bit in his wheelhouse here.
Yeah. Here's some comments that his dad and his grandfather served in combat in World War One and Two, and he served during the Vietnam period, but not in Vietnam. You know, it bothers me that there are some people who, like him, served during the Vietnam era, but not in Vietnam, but don't feel that they're really veterans because they didn't serve in combat. He made his life available to serve. The fact the Army didn't take him for that and put him to work doing something else, he wasn't supposed to go start another war to get himself in combat.
Well, that's my point, Denny. Isn't that just a happenstance of fate about timing in life? I mean, hopefully it would be wonderful if nobody ever had to serve in combat. It's just, you know, again, to take what it means to be free and to know what the sacrifices have been made for us is really just as important as, you know, again, it's timing. I was a girl and they didn't have girl soldiers who was coming up. I mean, so much has to do with fate.
Well, and it's more than that. While I was in combat, we needed people back here in the States doing paychecks, maintaining equipment, buying new stuff. There's plenty of jobs for military and civilians, but military people in the States during combat. Somebody had to do it, and he did it. Could he have been sent overseas? Sure, he could have. Would he have gone and served well? Of course he would have. But the fact that you weren't sent somewhere, that's no reason to belittle any part of your service. And this guy obviously loves and serves our country and loves and serves his fellow soldiers.
Yeah, I think he's an amazing person, and I hope to meet him in March at the film festival. Again, you all are seeing this first. This is the first time I've done that, is show a film we're going to screen prior to us screening it. So, but I felt it was so enriching, and I couldn't wait.
Believe me, I believe you. Another comment. He's quite a leader. He gathered a team, seemingly mostly of vets. I guess that's right. And he started helping vets in need. And it wasn't a one-time helping thing, which is good, doing one-time things. They're still at it. That means he's a leader, and he knows how to share a vision, and he knows how to take care of the people that's working with him, or they'd wander off. We need leaders, right?
Oh, absolutely. Don't even start me.
Now, here's a comment that I thought was interesting. He wears a jacket that says DAV. That stands for Disabled American Veterans. He certainly could be a disabled veteran. He could have had a disease.
I believe he is. I don't think that's just happenstance. I believe there was something about that.
And there certainly could have been. Or it could have been the DAV honored him by giving him a jacket because he helps disabled veterans.
Well, that's true, too.
So I can't believe he was phonying up. I write that one off. But that was just an interesting thing. And whatever it was, he's the kind of guy the DAV should be honoring and respecting and supporting. And apparently they are. Here's another comment. He said there are not enough shelters for the homeless in his area, and most of the people don't want a homeless shelter in their neighborhood. You know, that's a good point. I don't want a homeless shelter in my neighborhood. On the other hand, if I don't want one in my neighborhood, why should it be anywhere?
Yeah, whose neighborhood do you want it in? And that's the next thing. Now, I don't know if anybody who's listening knows anything about Cape May County, New Jersey, but I mean, Cape May is a summer destination, but it's not, I mean, it's right there on the edge of the Pine Barrens. So it's really quite, you know, remote in some ways, especially in the winter months. So, you know, this is not an urban environment that these people are in. So, again, if we won't take these people, who will? And that's the point.
It is, particularly since they're our veterans.
Exactly. And again, I don't sit here able to speak my mind, which has often gotten me into trouble, without knowing that it came at a price. I really am well aware of that.
Okay, here's another one. He noted that while the VA does a great job, they don't take vets by the hand and help them determine what they need that the VA can provide. If you don't know what you want from the VA, don't bother going there. And that's true. The VA, most places, do a really good job. If you're in the system, know what you want, and you're plugged in. It's getting there that is a challenge.
And of course, if you have any kind of mental or emotional disability, you need an advocate, because you're not capable of often people with those afflictions have a very low threshold of frustration, and it's, you really need an advocate. And that's the point, is he said he's fulfilling that mission.
And one guy said, I don't go to the VA anymore. I found them just a bunch of jerks. Well, there are some VA facilities that are like that. Most are not. I don't know what else to say. That's just reality.
Again, I think that speaks to the low threshold of frustration. And again, anything that has to do, you have to go online for, creates another barrier. It's about barriers.
It is. I like the fact that he said sometimes vets just need someone to talk to. That's a really good point. Somebody who will show interest in them personally, not drop something off, but actually spend some time with them, just talking with them. That's awesome. Final comment, and then we're about done. He encouraged people who see somebody wearing a veteran hat to say, thank you for your service. And he said his favorite response is, it was my honor.
Aw.
That's great.
That's touching.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. Diane, we got a minute. Again, the film festival, give us again the dates and times and how to get
it. It's in Asbury Park, New Jersey, and you can see all about it and the schedule and the wonderful films that we're screening this year on www.gsff.org. And please seek me out. If you make the event, come and say hi. I would love to meet you in person.
Diane, thank you. Thank you for being a great member of the Frontlines of Freedom team. Thank you for the great movies you find for us. Thank you that we can continue to work together going into future years. And I'm delighted just delighted with the way things work out like this.
Me too, Denny. Thank you.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up next, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups right now. How about 64 now? I want you Ranger ready. Then stand at ease.
Question for you. Have you ever wondered what you do if you are forced to defend yourself or your family? It's not fun to think about, but the truth is these situations can happen to anyone, so it's important to be prepared. In addition to likely being one of the worst days of your life, if you don't have self-defense coverage, you could be left with a mountain of legal bills. Join U.S. Law Shield today and receive immediate coverage, affordable, customizable membership options, and peace of mind.
Silver has increased 24% over the past 15 months and is a solid financial investment. Silver is projected to continue its rise and is nowhere near its 2011 high of $49 an ounce. So there's still a lot of room for investment growth. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. I do some coin collecting. Universal Coin and Bullion was the leader of the year in the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a great place to purchase gold and silver. I encourage you to go to universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. You'll like it. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Colonel, a guy who didn't leave his name called to say he would never listen to us again because for 2 weeks in a row, Denny endorsed Biden over Trump.
Wow. How does one address that? I've never endorsed any candidate on this show, and I think it's pretty clear that I'm very unhappy with our current president. Oh, well. And now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 2 August 1819, the first parachute jump from a balloon was made by Charles Gilly in New York City.
I wonder where he landed.
Well, he only jumped once, apparently.
There's a good point. And on 2 August 1865, the captain and crew of the Confederate States ship Shenandoah, still prowling the waters of the Pacific in search of Yankee whaling ships, was finally informed by a British vessel that the South had lost the war. The Shenandoah was the last major Confederate cruiser to set sail. Launched as a British vessel in September 1863, it was purchased by the Confederates and commissioned in October 1864. The 230-foot-long craft was armed with 8 large guns and a crew of 73 sailors. Commanded by Captain James Waddell, the Shenandoah steered towards the Pacific and targeted Yankee whaling ships. Waddell enjoyed great success, taking 6 ships in the South Pacific, before slipping into Melbourne, Australia for repairs in January of 1865. Within a month, the Shenandoah was back out on the loose, wreaking havoc in the waters around Alaska. The rebel ship captured 32 additional Union vessels, most of which were burned. He finally accepted an English captain's report on August 2, 1865. The Shenandoah pulled off another remarkable feat by sailing from the Northern Pacific all the way to Liverpool, England, without stopping at any ports. Arriving on November 6th, Waddell surrendered his ship to British officials.
Which begs the question, Colonel, how did he get back home to America?
Or did he?
Oh, true. And on 2 August 1909, what would become the U.S. Army Air Corps was formed as the Army Signal Corps took first delivery from the Wright brothers.
That had to have been cool. And on the 1st of August, 1943, during World War II, a Japanese destroyer rammed American PT boat 109, slicing it in two. The destruction was so massive that other PT boats in the area assumed the crew was dead. 2 crewmen were killed. 11 survived, including Lieutenant John Kennedy. Japanese aircraft had been on a PT boat hunt in the area, bombing the PT base at Rendezvous Island. The Japanese had to get several of their destroyers to the southern bank of the Columbanga Island to deliver war supplies. But our PT boats were a threat. Despite the bombing at Rendova, PTs set out to intercept the Japanese destroyers. During the battle, Japan's Macquarie hit PT-109, leaving 11 crewmen floundering in the Pacific. After 5 hours of clinging to debris, the crew made it to a coral island. Kennedy swam out to sea again, hoping to flag down a passing American boat. None came. Returning to the island, he fell ill. After he recovered, they swam to a larger island. There they met two natives from the island who agreed to take a message south. Kennedy carved the message onto a coconut shell. Quote, Nauru Island, native knows position. He can pilot. 11 alive, need a small boat. The message reached a coast watcher. Kennedy and his crew were paddled to him. A PT boat then took him to Rendova. Kennedy was ultimately awarded the Navy and Marine Corps Medal. The coconut shell used to deliver the message found a place in history and in the Oval Office.
On 29 July 1945, during World War II, Japanese warships sank the American cruiser Indianapolis, killing 883 seamen in the worst loss in the history of the U.S. Navy. The end was near for Japan, but it was determined to go down fighting. Just before midnight on the 29th, the Indianapolis, the flagship of the 5th Fleet, was on its way unescorted to Guam. It was torpedoed by a Japanese submarine. There were 1,196 crewmen on board the Indianapolis. Over 350 died upon impact of the torpedo or went down with the ship. Over 800 fell into the Pacific. Of those, about 50 died that first night from injuries. The remaining seamen were left to flounder in the Pacific, fend off sharks, drink seawater, and wait to be rescued. Because there was no time for a distress signal before the ship sunk, it was 84 hours before help arrived. Only 318 survived. The rest were eaten by sharks or drowned. Had the attack happened only 3 days earlier, the Indianapolis would have been sunk carrying the atom bomb, which it delivered for scientists to assemble and use on Japan.
Wow. And on 2nd of August, 1990, Iraq invaded Kuwait, seizing control of the oil-rich emirate. 330 Kuwaitis died during the occupation and war. Saddam Hussein, the leader of Iraq, took over Kuwait. President Bush led an international coalition for sanctions and a demand of withdrawal. By a vote of 14-0, the UN Security Council condemned the invasion and annexation of Kuwait by Iraq and demanded the unconditional withdrawal of Iraqi troops from Kuwait. The Iraqis were later driven out in Operation Desert Storm.
And on 31 July 1991, President Bush and Soviet President Mikhail S. Gorbachev signed the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty in Moscow.
And that's military history for today. What would you do if you were forced to defend yourself or your family? These situations could happen to anybody, so it's important to be prepared. In addition to it being the worst day of your life, you can face a large amount of legal bills. Even if you're in the right in a self-defense situation, there will always be an investigation and you can find yourself in the legal system. It's just the way the law works. This is why U.S. Law Shield was formed. They're there to help people through these events who never thought this would happen to them. With their legal defense for self-defense program, experienced attorneys are always ready to defend you 24/7, 365. And now it's time for a self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, Kevin Simmons, who was wanted by police for a string of bank robberies, engaged in a high-speed chase and drove the wrong way down a one-way street, causing several car accidents before crashing his vehicle. He then tried to carjack an elderly woman's car and was fiercely beating her about the head and shoulders when she screamed for help. Army vet Trevor Huff heard her pleas for help and didn't hesitate to respond. With the help of two other military vets, Huff physically subdued the attacker until police arrived. Simmons was arrested for attempted carjacking and fleeing arrest.
Thanks, Colonel. You gotta love this story. Serial bank robber captured by three military veterans. But it got me to thinking, what is it about some people? Colonel Dave Grossman, retired Army Ranger and friend to Front Lines of Freedom, is one of the world's foremost authorities on the topic of killology. Killology, loosely defined, is the study of the legal taking of a human life. In his book, On Combat, Dave says there are three kinds of people in the world. 98% are sheep. They live their lives the ordinary way. They have common goals like raising a family, getting a good job, buying a house, and getting off work in time for their kid's soccer game. They are nonviolent by nature and prefer to live their lives free of conflict. These are all good and noble things. So there's nothing wrong with being a sheep, until you meet a wolf. Approximately 1% of our population are sociopaths or psychopaths. Their defining characteristic is this: they can take a human life without remorse. The remaining 1% of society are also capable of taking a human life. Grossman calls them sheepdogs. They look a lot like the wolf in that they're a tough breed, but here's the difference. The wolf kills for selfish gain and pleasure, but the sheepdog only kills to protect other innocent life. That's a huge difference. Most people who enter the military are changed and molded into protectors and defenders. After all, that's one of the things that draw them to the military in the first place. During boot camp and subsequent training, the basic metal of the sheepdog is tested by fire and forged and honed to a razor's edge, so much so that it changes us forever. To this day, even at age 66, my first instinct is to run toward the gunfire. Not because I'm stupid, but simply because I was trained to resist evil and to protect and defend the weakest among us. Army vet Trevor Huff and the two military vets who helped him subdue the bank robber were simply acting on the mindset and the instincts that had been instilled inside their hearts while in the military. Frontlines of Freedom is proud to identify with these three veterans, and we're happy that none of them were hurt. There was no permanent damage done to the elderly woman, and she is healing nicely thanks to the courage of these veterans. As is usually the case, military veterans don't stop serving at the end of their military careers, because once the military changes you, you are changed forever.
Well said, Skip. Our movie of the month is Cape May County. We just reviewed it. You can still go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog, get the link, and watch it for free. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, Congressman and retired General Jack Bergman will join us. Then we'll discuss why to own gold with Forrest Hamilton. Veteran Jeff Nelligan will discuss his book on raising children. And Teresa Robinson will introduce us to another female veteran. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation to return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And to get active in correcting our nation, plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.